Welcome inside the coach's room. Every week, we talk to elite coaches and backroom staff about their experiences, how they develop, and how they develop their players.
No, there is too much emphasis on the game, on winning, on results in academy football. It's nonsensical. It doesn't matter. You know, what matters is getting the player to improve and getting the player to the next level and getting players into the first team. That's what we're trying to do.
In this episode, we talk to Saul Isaacson-Hurst. Saul spent over 10 years coaching in Premier League Academy football at clubs like Arsenal, Chelsea and Tottenham Hotspur. And he is also the founder of My Personal Football Coach. We had a great discussion about individual coaching, about the role of parents, agents, etc., the environment of players, and we discussed his journey in football. Enjoy this episode with Saul Isaacson-Hurst. Yes, Saul, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
Welcome
inside the coach's room.
Yeah. Inside your office, I can see almost.
Yeah, my office. Yeah. Well, I was thinking the other day, actually, my coach's room really is the grass. So, you know, but yeah, this is another place I use sometimes.
how much time do you actually spend on that desk?
Not a lot. Funny enough, actually, it's quite a new area. I moved house recently and I thought, you know, I need a bit more of a specific area to work, you know, post-COVID and, you know, working from home. And I've always had a room, and then anyway, yeah, long story, it's a relatively new space. So I try to, when I'm catching up admin, do it here rather than do it in a coffee shop or something like that. You know,
just a bit more focused. Be stylish with all the big players behind you.
Yeah, some of my favorite players, you know, I grew up with a lot of number 10s in there, a lot of dribblers.
Yeah, cool. Is it Bergkamp also there?
Bergkamp, yeah, probably my favorite player growing up as an Arsenal fan, who, you know, for me was big inspiration in my football life.
Okay, cool. Okay, I still need to put my logo behind me. I'm still in front of a white wall. I can change that for sure. Okay, there was some attention around you recently with Madueke, who moved from PSV to Chelsea, of course. So you've been in the papers. Maybe we can go into that later, or what does it do for you, or how do you even look at that process? But I think it's interesting to start off, you're an individual coach, if I can say it like that.
Yeah.
You have a company or a brand called My Personal Football Coach, but how would you describe yourself?
Yeah, I think, I'm an individual coaching specialist or individual technical specialist, whether that's in the individual one-to-one environment or in team environments. You know, my background in academy football is very much, you know, technical coaching based within teams and working small groups and sometimes individuals, but very much with that individual technical focus. I mean, ironically, you know, very much, you know, classical Dutch Cova type. From that, you know, that under that umbrella, so that individual ball mastery and 1v1 specific work. So yeah, I mean, it's sort of individual coaching, technical specialist, if you like, and work individual players and in groups and for academies.
Okay, clear. How did you get into this? Because we've seen here in the Netherlands, we see a couple of guys. I think you know of a few of them, like Guido.
Yeah, no, Guido.
Born to play. They kind of shifted from, let's say, being a team coach, being more into, let's say, really superficial, being more into skills and individual training, and then starting their own brand or company or soccer school, whatever, or football school. How did you roll into this?
Yeah, I think, I started my coaching career in America, and you know, the under Tim Bradbury, who was, you know, my mentor, coach, educator, and very much, you know, helped me, schooled me in the ways of individual coaching, but just in a team environment. And obviously then went to work at Tottenham and came back, and the same, they had that very much specific. So I always had that individual coaching technical philosophy, but in that team base. And I started doing individual coaching at the same time when returning from America, and started my own business at the time. So I was working part-time in academy football, had my own business as well. I was doing my teacher training as well. And then very quickly, I sort of found my niche within the individual training. I built a reputation quickly by training players up and getting them signed into academies. through my training philosophy, which was basically the same as what I do in team training, and individual ball mastery and 1v1 domination, using those same principles when working individually with players. And then, as I progressed through my academy career, still, kept that specialism, that emphasis, if you like. And then, while being an individual skills coach in my own business, so that's sort of, I realized quickly that was what I wanted to specialize in. I was good at that. I got identified that the reason I progressed so quickly at Tottenham in my first academy role was because they liked what I was doing with the individual stuff in terms of the technical, the ball mastery and the 1v1. And so, so then I decided to really focus on that and just carry on doing it. I mean, it's what I, that's how I saw the game anyway. Look at the players behind me on the back of the wall as well. That's what football is to me, players who can excite and entertain and be creative and, are good on the ball. And that's why the football I like watching. So that's the way I coached, whether it was in a team environment or an individual environment.
Did you also realize, because I think I said it already 100 times on this podcast, I noticed that throughout my coaching career, I was more team oriented and also more result oriented. So the process was focused on getting, of course, developing the goal was to win. That's called like it is. Mm. That's why I connected good with senior teams and first teams. Mm. Was for you maybe it was the, could it be that it was the other way around, that you tend to be more towards the individual and let's say becoming 1% better every day, more in that area of development?
Yeah, I think that was always my perception anyway. And I was lucky, like I said, I worked under Tim, and then my first job at Tottenham, Chris Ramsey gave me my first job. His first words to me, when he heard my first team, the nines, he said, I don't want any of this, defending as a team, I don't want any, pass. We need to develop the individuals, all like, develop, make them individually better. He was, and he is and still is, someone who is unique, a bit of a maverick himself, someone, he's unconventional,
he's head of Academy of QPR, right?
Now he's head of Academy QPR. So I was lucky because I went into an environment that was encouraging that anyway. So I progressed doing that. And obviously that might have changed in different environments I went into, but that was always my mindset anyway. I was looking to try and develop individual players. Obviously, you're working lower down, it's easier to do that in terms of if you're working in the lower age groups in the academy environment. That was always my sort of the way I saw it, the way I saw the game, the way I still see development and whatever age group I'm working with now. It's about, can we get those individuals a little bit better? That's the end game.
I think it really relates as well to the current way that we approach football, specifically in the Netherlands. I don't know too much into detail about the UK, that after, let's say, the revolution at Ajax, that they said, okay, teams don't make the first team. It's only individual players that make the first team 3-4 a year or whenever they are ready. So we should focus more on the individual, and every individual has his own needs or her own needs. So we should make tailor-made programs. One needs more resistance. One needs a pat on the back, whatever. This is also the style that you kind of naturally already had when you start coaching.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, it's easy for me to say because I've worked in those progressive environments, but you can see, like you said, there is too much emphasis on the game, on winning, on results in academy football. It's nonsensical. It doesn't matter. What matters is getting the player to improve and getting the player to the next level and getting players into the first team. That's what we're trying to do. So a lot comes down to coach egos and the egos of adults often, by wanting to do. And also the problem is also often we perceive success by what we see on our team performance. So a team wins 3-1. Oh, that was great. Yeah, we won there.
Or we are judged, the way. That could also be.
Yeah. Yeah, we're also judged by our management, our hierarchy, or whatever. But really, you've got to say, well, who's got the best players? Who's got the five best players on the pitch? That was always something, someone said to me as well in my early career, look at the five best players. Who's got the five best players? The five best talents. You've got the best chance to do that. And that's what it's about. That's obviously, that's a problem worldwide. I think clubs say they're progressive, but, older group sessions, the groups all the way through, very rondo-based, team-based, play the ball quick, move the ball quick. It's about percentages. It's about, trying not to make mistakes. And actually, we should be encouraging mistakes. We encourage a little bit more chaos, a little bit more, messiness, because actually that's going to support players in the long run. But you've got to be really brave to stand up and say, yeah, we're going to do that, because you have to convince the parents and obviously the players and, you know, everyone saying, this is our project, this is the reason why we're doing it. And, you know, we all know in academy football how challenging recruitment is. It's the key, you know, to getting the best players through the door to then work with them and develop them. If you haven't got that raw talent, it becomes more difficult. So, you know, but that's what I say, you've got to be bold and be able to do that.
Yeah, and it gives, and it also needs coaches that they let go, and they let go of the control of a match or players or whatever. If it's up to the players, they do whatever they think is the best at that point, which can lead to things you maybe have not agreed on in your team
exactly.
Whatever. And that's, I think, because of the way that coaching also evolved. So you have a lot of guys starting at 15, 16, and when they're 30, they already have 15 years under the belt. They know everything about any principle. They can explain anything to anybody. So we're over-informing players, whatever. So maybe we should leave it up more to the players.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a balance. And the problem we've had in this country, you've had some people go too far the other way, where it's, you know, it's a laissez-faire approach where, you know, everything has to be in a game. Just put them in a game, let them do it individually.
Sure, okay, I understand.
And that's an even bigger problem, because, you know, a lot of coaches are coming out of our coach education program saying, oh, don't work, you know, don't work individually with the ball, don't work anything in isolation. They don't understand it properly, or I'm not sure what's been going on when they've been doing their coach education. So they've gone too far the other way. So now players, you know, might develop these attributes or they might not. And if they don't, actually, well, tough luck, you know, that's the problem. So you have to find a balance somewhere in between. You know, we coach for a reason, to improve players and to understand when and where to develop them, you know. So yeah, I mean, you know, like everything, everyone's got confirmation bias. Everyone believes their way of doing things are the best. So,
can you maybe enlighten us a little bit on why, let's say, maybe your or individual coaching in general is so beneficial for players? Because indeed, a lot of coach education and deliberate play, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Play games, only realistic scenarios, only game-based scenarios or game-based situation. While if I look at your Instagram, it's completely perceived as the opposite. I'm not making any judgments here, but you see a net in a goal, you see single movements, or so why is this so beneficial?
Yeah, I mean, I think first you've got to confront the misinterpretations of working this way. So first of all, like people say, you know, I think my work has definitely evolved and changed over the, you know, 20 odd years I've been doing it. For example, I realize how important the game is and linking everything to the game. And one of the misconceptions people have is that, oh, when you work in isolation, you can't link it to the game, but you can, you know, and it's imperative that you do, you know. So how do you do that? You make your practices game-like or game-specific. So what I always said, you know, you try and break the game down into microcosmic examples of what we're trying to do. Particularly, I work a lot around the 1v1 duel areas in terms of receiving and always having an end product. So when you see my practice, they always got a goal there, you know, so it's receiving to turn to shoot. So we're doing position-specific game-like practices. And that's what the players always say to me. Like, hey, oh, I like this training because I see the game in it. I see what we're doing here. We're working for a reason. We have a rationale. Where a lot of people you see maybe on Instagram, you know, they're doing ladders or running through hoops and stuff like that, which is fair enough if you're a conditioning coach, whatever. But if you're a football coach, you know, you stick to working with how the game works, if you like. So that's really important. And then people say, well, you know, is it game realistic? Well, it is game realistic. It was game linked to the game. And also, is it challenging? It is challenging. If you look at my sessions, you know, players come out, they're blowing. It's high intensity. It's dynamic. It's explosive. It's challenging. You're challenging players' movement on the ball. So what you're doing, and this is your thought about a lot, you know, you talk about quality over quantity. Yeah, you could have more contextual interference and more players and more this and around there. But what you're doing, you're shrinking that to have more quality or more directed outcomes rather than that, you know. And the players still have to make decisions. They still got to learn to manage the ball, manage the movement, and movement's a key point as well, because we're developing players' movement on the ball, developing players' movement for the highest level, for the game at the elite level, those explosive 1v1 dynamic movements on both sides, you know, those game functional movements, and linking to that. And so I think you have to you confront that contradiction to begin with, and then say yes, like anything in life, you know, if you've got a talented piano player, you know, or you're a talented singer in your family, or someone who's good at maths or whatever, you know, you work in individual with someone, you try and support them in challenging them and really focusing in on what they need. That could be the same as a beginner as well. You know, little Billy, you know, is just starting up playing piano, wants to learn a bit better, quick, you know, helps me working with individual rather than in a group. Same as I've got an individual footballer, you support them in just a little bit of a basic skills, which will increase their confidence and then help them in the games, you know. It's, and it's always supplement, you know, this is always supplements the team training and the game. Yeah. You know, it shouldn't ideally never replace it. And I mean, sometimes it has done, like some of Max Aaron's in the past and things like that, but generally it supplements it. So you work alongside that, you know, and that's what I do with my players, like the Premier League players or the Championship players I work with now. You know, we train every week. When I watch the games, I analyse the games, we come back, we build that into our sessions. You know, this supplements what they guys are going to do in that. So yeah, it's really important. It's really powerful. And I, you know, and I can't believe, you know, people can't see, you know, or still question the validity of it, because, you know, I see it when I watch Match of the Day, and I've watched my clients do things. We try in games against some of the best fullbacks in the world, you know, and it's, and, you know, and it's, well, it used to be more frustrating, because now I'm, you know, I'm to a point where I don't, you know, I can, I'm just getting on what I'm doing. I'm working with some of the best young players in the world. I don't need to beg people to embrace this. But I mean, yeah, it's just, I think, you know, people, we're missing a trick somewhere along the line as well.
Well, it is, in my opinion, hard for people to also choose for something else. So no, you've learned it in one way.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I don't know if I can add anything to that, because yeah, I in the back in the day, I chose for this method or blah, 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 whatever. So, but it's harder to see that this could be beneficial as well, or it could be an add-on, or after their team training, it's ego-oriented. You're going to go to the individual coach. Maybe he says something different than me. I don't want that. That could challenging, for example.
I think that works on a couple of levels, because, you know, as in England, you say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I mean, saying maybe I have a bit of that perception, you know, you can be stuck in your ways. But I think there's a few things going on here as well. It's almost like these elements of the game, we don't teach enough. The things that change game, those 1v1 skills, those 1v1 duels, 1v1 tactics, which is important. You can break these down. That's what we work on. 1v1 tactics. Some players have them innately, right? And you don't need them. But you have to scaffold players learning. All players should have them. All players should be able to stay on the ball, receive the ball under pressure, and ideally be able to play forward, break the lines with a pass or dribbling, or, you know, running forward. So what you can do, you can break these things down, look at the patterns in the game, and then train players to do this. It's, I do it. And I always watch it. I watch players on TV doing it every week now. So you can do that. So that's, we have to, so the question is, why don't we do that? And I think actually, you know, and a lot of the coach education comes from coaches who don't believe you can do that. They think, oh no, you know, they play, these are tricks or something mythical or something that happens where players only get them, you know, from the playground or developing, which they do, some do, but some can be taught as well. You can improve players. There's a big gap, big open space here of maybe an information gap here between, you know, a lot of the coach education fraternity who have never encountered this. And like say, don't understand it. So you say, well, no, don't do that. Do everything in the game. Players will evolve themselves. There's also that. So, and also there's like, you know, this games for understanding model that's come out as well, which is interesting. It's come a lot from rugby. You know, rugby does this. Well, rugby's a lot different to football, you know, that sort of thing, which is not saying don't do games for understanding. So if I'm an academy coach still now, most of my session will be games, condition games.
Sure.
The 20% of isolated work is 20%, but still really important. So, yeah, I think there's a bit of a strange information gap going on here, a lot of things. And unfortunately, a lot of young coaches are coming out not understanding how much value and benefit there is to this work.
Yeah, and it's, I completely agree. And it's also a little bit of a practical side, probably. If you have 15 players in front of you and you want to do the same style of session like you are doing, it's just not possible.
It is possible. That's the thing. So, you know, and this is what I look, you know, I've working with Arsenal with, you know, helping their coaches. You know, when I was there, like, you can, it's about session organization. And that's the problem. You know, we have a, you know, have a simple rule that, you know, like I said, Tim Bradby taught me when I was first growing up, you know, as a coach, no laps, no lines, no lectures. You know, you shouldn't be standing around, shouldn't be talking too long, you know, just shouldn't be running laps. The way you construct the session is possible to get those same outcomes in a team sort of thing. You just got to be creative and dynamic. So what I mean by that, so you got, you know, 15 players, maybe start with one ball each. Maybe then one ball between three, working some passive pressure, some 1v1, going to some live 1v1, maybe three groups of five into another live 1v1, or like into that sort of thing. So you can do that. It's just you have to be brave as a coach saying,
exactly.
I've got three groups working, I've got five groups working. It's possible, but you just got to be a bit more creative with it.
Yeah, exactly my point. You have to be willing to look behind your, how do you say it in English? Beyond your normal style of working, because within having attention on everybody, you have to maybe have attention for five players and then make sure the other one maybe take care of their own or they whatever they do, but you cannot
look
at them literally. So within, let's say, old-fashioned.
Yeah, you've got to trust the players.
Yeah, and you see a lot of, well, I've done it as well, but that coach, no, I want to have my attention for everybody, or at least find a way that everybody's involved, and this would just break it up into smaller groups, and then, some the 10 players maybe don't have your attention for 10 minutes. They will figure it out. They do it on the streets also. So
exactly.
It is looking beyond, let's say, what you have learned.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the whole point. And thinking about the player and what they're getting out, and trusting the player, trusting them to just spend time on the ball, and they'll be all right for a few minutes to organize themselves.
Yeah. And what I also really, I was thinking about myself, because I was a first team coach and I quit for 3 years, and now I'm getting back in it, but it's with my 6-year-old boy. It's completely different. But what I tend to notice there, because the players that we like and the players that we want to watch in the stadium are the players that can make a difference on the ball. So they can do something which is unexpected. They can beat an opponent. They can create something out of nothing, for example. But when I stepped on the pitch with my boy, and I saw the game was organized in a way, 4-4 versus 4. And the first thing the coach said when somebody else was open, he was not under pressure, was a pass. Mm. He had to pass the ball. He's 6 years old. I think if you're, let's say, starting to football until whatever, any age, the first thing you should develop is your own skills, not handing somebody else the ball. But it's so almost natural to coach players to pass the ball. It takes away all this, let's say, beautiful skills that you are working on as well that make the game much more fun.
Absolutely. And you've got to encourage players to spend time on the ball. And that might be, you know, okay, they might want to pass, but we've got, you know, we have to create environments, practices, sessions which encourage but challenge, and then sometimes force the players to stay on the ball. That's why I go, I'm lucky I travel around the world to do these, you know, coaches, you know, conferences and this sort of thing. And I'll watch another summer session. They'll do an overloaded possession type session, which is great. I like that. But then you put these same players in like a 1v1 or a 2v2 when they're not overloaded, they struggle because they're so used to having the spare pass all the time of being able to release the ball. So they have to have that balance. You want to understand the overload to be able to move the ball quick and create angles, but they have to also be able to solve the problem themselves, you know. And it doesn't mean every player doesn't look like, you know, a Ronaldo or a Nonny, you know, driving and beating players, skill pass players. It might be more of a Xavi, you know, or Busquets being able to roll out a problem. So understanding 1v1 looks different for all players in all areas of the pitch. But at the highest level, if you want to develop Champions League players, all players need this, you know, whether you're a centre-back, full-back, you know, midfielder, whatever. So they need to be creative with your practices. Make sure you give players time on the ball. And sometimes you've got to force them on time, to have time on the ball to do that if they really want to push on, you know. But going back to what you said as well, I remember like vividly, you know, Jamal Musiala, when I was my first year training and coaching at Chelsea, I took the under 10s, and Jamal was in that same age group. And I remember coaches there was saying, come on, Jamal, pass it, lose it, oh, he's good, but he takes too long on the ball, that sort of thing. And I just remember, you know, send it to him, just do what you got to do, son, just dribble, you know, just go and express yourself, because that's, you know, for me, that's what the ball game is about, you know. And he will lose the ball. And if he loses the ball too much, his teammates get onto him, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know,
but
you're not going to develop players. You know, if you look statistically, even the best players in the world who are dribblers, you know, they lose the ball often in the highest level. So you've got to give these young guys time to develop.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, I'm not saying that I changed everything, but at least my kid has the ball, I said, if you can first try to solve it yourself or whatever. And then he's not a talent, but he thinks it's a lot of fun. And now he likes to challenge players. And then if they move up to him, he tries to beat them and then pass, which is for him is kind of his natural way to solve it. Because,
well, that's good.
And then so he kind of finds his own way. It's exactly like you said, they have to find their own way of being the best, or expressing themselves is maybe the best way,
definitely.
To say it. If a player comes to you for the first time, they call you Saul, I've heard you on the podcast, I want to train with you, or I just saw you because this is the football world, I saw you made Madueke the best talent in England. Yeah. You can do it with me. You probably have those people calling you, but one. once they start with you, let's say the first session, how is the process? What do you do?
First of all, tell them Nonny got there, you know, without my help, because he's a top talent.
I'm joking.
But I get that a lot anyway. People presume anyway.
You're on the newspapers. You're the success. Yeah. If I train with you, I become a professional player. So maybe that's part of your process.
That's the other thing. You know, if I get that from a player or a parent, first thing we'd have a discussion is about, you know, the reality of trying to get to be a professional and the statistically how difficult it is. But I mean, it depends how the age of the player, obviously. I mean, if it's a pro player, an older player, you know, it's about, okay, what position do you play? What sort of player are you in that position? And then the process is always the same. Okay, if he's, for example, a wide player like Nonny, you know, what are the game changing moments in that position? You know, hey, you know, and it's about breaking lines really. 1v1 domination. Can you dribble past players? Can you pass? Have you got end product? It's a pass, shot, or a cross? And can you run beyond? Maybe can you beat them with your run as well? So looking at that, breaking it down. And this, for example, a player came to me the other day, number 8, plays in one of the best, biggest clubs in England, in London. Very good talent, plays number 8 a lot. So we had the same conversation. I said, I've seen you play, but you can't break lines with the ball effectively enough. You know, you're great in terms of distribution. You can run beyond. But my question is, why can't you run with the ball a little bit more? And he said, yeah, we never really work on that, which just doesn't surprise me because clubs don't. So then understanding this, so while not forgetting their super strengths and working on those things, but then understanding what can make him better and actually get him to the highest level. And that is actually, okay, being a player like, you know, a midfielder, Thiago, like where you can actually break lines and, you know, and in, like I say, it's not, you don't have to be like a Gazza, you know, or, sure, you know, someone who can beat 6-4-7, 5-6-7 players like Musiala did the other night. You have to break that one player, break that one line to then, you know, break the pass and that sort of thing to then create the overload somewhere there. So we look at that, break it down, and then just go into the sessions, do a lot of filming the sessions, feedback. Ideally, if they're a pro, go and watch them in their games as well, do a bit of their game analysis, feedback with the clips, and then work towards developing their all-round game. And my whole methodology is built around the 1v1 duel, even with the ball mastery I do. You know, that's very specific to 1v1 elements, 1v1 movements in the game, basically, and try and develop those key areas.
Okay, clear. So it's breaking, first looking at his profile, breaking down, let's say, what you call the micro situations, or and then see where you can start, where the first steps are to help him or her. I was talking to Guido, Born to Play, and he said, well, a similar way, also works with big talents and big players as well. And he said, yeah, in those first sessions, you also trying to look at what are their, let's say, mental capabilities, where is their comfort zone, and where can I push them out of it to see, because that's where the development is. Is that something you do intentionally as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes naturally, doesn't it? You know, you're trying to stress the player, push the player, see how far they go. I mean, yeah, in terms of mentality, you know, it's just, for players coming to me anyway, that means they've made the decision to take that extra step. And I talk about that, you know, they're willing to work a little bit extra, maybe than everybody else is. And that's a really important step anyway. And then you see that I get contacted all the time on Instagram from pros, you know, Premier League and around the world. Yeah, I want to do a session. I want to work. Okay, let's do it, follow up. And they don't have that extra, like say, mentality to push it, to take that important step. So, I mean, yeah, I think is a really important part. But I mean, once players come to you, I think they've made that acceptance. Once they're willing to do it, it's a big step, and then they'll see the benefit.
Yeah. So it's as soon as they step on the pitch, you are convinced.
They're committed. Yeah. I mean, sometimes they come and maybe they've been pushed by an agent. I mean, sometimes young players come and you can tell their parents are, you know, pushing them. And then I say, this doesn't work, because there's no point in, you know, doing these sessions for you. The player has to want to do these sessions, you know, there's no point in wasting anyone's time or money, that sort of thing. So, yeah, but I mean, generally, you know, like those players who are willing to do it, and, you know, it's really powerful, yeah.
Coaches, sorry for the interruption. Besides the coaches room, I run another company called Football Tours. This is a full service touring company, and we organize pre-season and winter training camps for professional football teams. We do this for both senior and youth teams, and we take care of everything. Hotel, training accommodation, friendly matches, whatever you need. We give youth teams the opportunity to train at the best youth academies of the Netherlands. Academies like PSV, Feyenoord, AZ Alkmaar and the KNVB, you can train there with your team. So, if you are a professional coach, you need to organize your training camp, or if you have a youth team and you want to train at the best facilities in the best academies of the Netherlands, go to footballtours.com. And now pay attention, tours is with a Z. So footballtours.com.
It's interesting because you touched upon the parents recently. Some issue with the camera, or is it stuck? Or
well, it keeps freezing there, so I'm freezing it there, doesn't it?
Okay. Oh, okay. Is it good now?
Yeah, it's good now, yeah. Okay.
But it was a while ago that Van Nistelrooy said, okay, we are over pushing kids. We have burnout kids at 18 to 21. That's exactly the age where they should be ready to start performing on the highest level. What is your vision on that process? Because I can imagine if you have a talented player and combine it with a really fanatic or a dad that lost his dream when he was young, let's call it like that, like it is, and they get pushed from club to club, and then on Sunday they have extra training with you, and Wednesday there's another individual coach who also has time, and then on Friday evening there's a mental coach because he should be mentally ready. How do you see that process with especially young players?
I mean, that's an issue. And also, I mean, a lot of people come and see me and they'll say, I'm seeing this coach, I'm seeing that coach. I don't like that. You know, I don't like the person. So hang on, you know, either trust me to do it or trust them to do it. It's no point. Seeing a kid getting mixed messages, it's a bit chaotic. I don't like it. But yeah, I mean, that is always an issue in any sport or, you know, in acting or thinking, you know, overzealous parents. So you've got to try and educate them and, you know, support them in that, and clubs will do that. I mean, but then he's just got to find the balance. You know, some people go too far the other way. Oh, yeah, you know, because if you're in an academy and you're not doing any extra work, unless you're naturally Maradona or Messi, you've got no chance, really. It's difficult because everyone else is working so hard. So you've got to do it. It doesn't necessarily have to be, I'm not saying do it with me. You could be doing it yourself. Do your own homework, do a little bit, 30 minutes, extra in the garden, wherever, by yourself. What I do is help quicken that process and, you know, make it more directed. But yeah, you don't have to do it. But, you know, this is the most competitive industry in the world. Everybody wants to be a footballer. You know, you've got to work hard. You've got to put the extra in. But, you know, there is a balance. So you've got to say, make sure children are having at least one day off when they're not doing anything. You know, they can just go and be kids and enjoy themselves. And in the summer, have time off as well, have a few weeks off when they're not doing any football sort of thing. But the key thing I always say to parents is like, are they enjoying it? This is the main thing, you know. If a player come to me and now they're going, yeah, I love this buzz this football. If they're not, then I'm saying, this is no, I'm not doing this anymore. No. I'm not going to coach this kid or this player. If they're not enjoying it, there's no point, because I won't enjoy it. So that's really the acid test. If they're, because, you know, most kids just like playing football. Most people into football, obsessed by football, want to do football all the time. So as long as they have that enjoyment, and you know, say they're not going into that where they think, oh, not another session, that thing, because then, you know, then it's a problem.
Yeah. Understand. Or do you sit down with the parents as well around that process of once in a while, okay, I see this or I see this, or how's school?
Yeah, we always have a review process. I mean, we always chat to parents regularly, you know, whether it's on after session or in a pitch, we sit down and have a coffee. I think it's really important. Same with agents as well, when I'm working with the players or with the players, you know, we always sort of, you have to communicate and say, right, what we're doing here, to be reflective. But yeah, and also saying, you know, what are you doing? Are you doing, how much are you doing? Oh, that, I'll say that is too much. You know, you know, what you're doing is not necessarily conducive to developing a top player.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I agree. I think it's very interesting, especially, okay, if you have top talents, that's not even the hardest group or good players or talent. They will find a way to deal with it. But it's especially the players that, let's say, right in between and then with some surroundings around them that want to push them a little bit harder. Let's call them parents. And that's I think the most interesting group. It's on any level at any club, even, well, I don't want to go back to my kids. We have a 6-year-old. We have 40 kids, and they train in 4 groups. They're already parents. But my kid should be in group 1. They're on freaking football for 3 months now. Why are you bothered by whatever? Let them play on the street.
Well, I had a conversation the other day with someone else on another podcast, and said, you know, if you ask any academy coach, what's the biggest problem in academy football, most people will say parents, or then quickly followed by agents, probably. But that's, you know, that can be, you know, a bit of a issue.
Yeah. And I had to make a shift myself as well, because I don't know if that's how that's for you, because I have always been, let's say, in performance football, whether it's the first team or selected players or first youth teams or whatever, or most professional football. So it was always about the best players. But now I see my kid is not the best player of that 40. The main thing is that he's enjoying it.
Yeah.
So there's an interest there as well. So for me, that was a shift to think differently, because as coaches, you always think, okay, we need to have the best for anybody. But sometimes it can just be it just has to be fun. It's part of their life. It's just, let's say, it's physical education almost, and it happened to be football for that kid.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, even though when you're in elite setting, you still should still be having fun. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Kids like to be challenged. They want to come and challenge environment, but they want to have, that's going to be fun anyway. So you still got to make that, that's the art of the coach, isn't it? So.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you are, the context that you work with is mainly at the elite side, and it has different, not different rules, but the fun part is maybe even more important that you don't over push them as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. If you look at your pathway, of course, like I said, I'm going to make it very superficial, like we do in football. You've been the most successful individual coach recently because you've made a guy go from, no, I'm joking again, but go from PSV to Eindhoven, from Chelsea to Chelsea, I mean. But I can't imagine it wasn't always like that. You started out somewhere. You started out in the USA, went to Tottenham, etc. And at one point, you made, was my conclusion, shift to individual coaching. What were, let's say, the hardest moments in this process? Because, again, 150,000 followers, all looks easy. You have a great company. You did an online conference, which had great speakers. But it didn't start out like this. What were hard moments, and what have you learned?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's been over 20 years. I'm my 21st year now coaching. I think reflecting on this, I think when I was leaving Spurs, that was a tough time for me, because like when Chris Ramsey left, he went to work in the 23s with Tim Sherwood, and he left the academy really, and then that someone else came in, and it just wasn't the same. And I was actually still am, but even more idealistic and hard headed, and maybe was creating issues or fighting battles that I shouldn't be fighting. And then I sort of fell out of love a little bit with it, and then left Tottenham in the end, and questioned it myself actually, because I lost a bit of passion. I thought, do I want to do this? And also I didn't know what I was going to do. So that was quite a challenging time. And then luckily then I went to work at Chelsea, which is exactly what I wanted anyway. That was almost what I'd almost been dreaming of. So that was turned out to be a good thing. So that was quite a challenging time, because I was still a young coach in my career and stuff like that.
How old were you?
I'm not sure. Well, I left Tottenham in 2012. So
9 years ago.
Yeah. So relatively young as a coach, in my coaching career. Done 6 years there. But then when I left Chelsea as well, was quite for different reasons, because I was too busy. My personal football coach, my app was doing really well. My individual coach was going really well. I was doing too many things. I was doing the app, my individual coaching, and Chelsea and academy. And I couldn't do any of them properly. And I said to them, I'm struggling here. I'm just overstretched. And I had to make the decision to leave Chelsea and leave one of the biggest brands in the world of football, which was really good for my business as well. And as an individual coach, I'm not going to lie. But I left there and Amakua, and it was, a very difficult decision, because it was an amazing academy, a great experience. I'd learned so much. But again, turned out to be the right decision. So I focused more on going my own way, and then doing that. And then, finally, I was just thinking this, and now actually, my battle's always been to, build my brand from scratch, because I'm not a Tottenham, I'm not a Chelsea, but I have that background behind me. And obviously I've done stuff with Arsenal. Now my challenge has been over the last, particularly the last 6, 7, 8 years with my personal football coach, is building the brand, getting that out there, and getting myself out there as a standalone, someone who can. And now luckily, I work as a consultant with these big clubs. They trust me to come in there because I've developed that individual brand, through my content, but mainly through my track record and my background of working with players and clubs and stuff like that. So trying to build my own brand has been the biggest challenge, and continues to be the biggest challenge, to carry on doing that and carry on sort of striving in that area.
Okay, clear. So it is, and That's clear. What have you learned from that?
Well, I've learned you've got to be brave. You know, fortune favors the brave. They say, you know, that old adage. You got to, you know, if you want something, you got to go out and get it. I'm a big believer in that anyway. You know, if you really, you have aspirations, you got to be courageous and trying to make them happen. And yeah, you know, just got to go and do that and work and healthy hard work. You know, it's a constant battle. It's a constant, you know, constant drive to go and carry on trying to be one of the best and trying to be top of the game and carry on getting these opportunities. You know, it's hard work.
Yeah. Hard work. So 9 years ago, let's take that point. You were moving away from Tottenham at that point, if I'm correct. Or was it Chelsea already there? No.
So yeah, 2012. So that's like 11 years ago.
Sorry, yeah.
So I left, leaving Tottenham, and then having a time where I wasn't sure what I was going to do. You know, I'd left, sort of fallen out of love a little bit with it because the last 6 months I didn't enjoy at Tottenham. And a lot of that to myself as well. You know, I said I was hard-headed. I didn't like the direction the academy was going in. Too idealistic or that sort of thing. And one second, that was actually, ironically, some brand new footballs had turned up and I needed for my session this afternoon with the pros. That's so tiny, but
it's important. You're not the first one that had a package delivered during a recording.
That's timing. But yeah, so I was, I mean, it's probably down to me. I was very hard-headed and very idealistic and sort of thing. So yeah, it was quite a challenging time because I was sort of, you know, I was still relatively new in the game. And, you know, you can sort of question what I want to do. And then when I was without a club for a bit as well, and I got offered a job at some other, you know, clubs, which was not as glamorous as Tottenham. And then, you know, fortunately, fate, whatever, you know, Chelsea came in. So it turned out good.
So you're, let's say, in this position, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to go full on for my own brand, for my personal football coach. And then it's literally, assumption here, but maybe you can add. It's literally just getting up, do the work, build an Instagram page, make pictures of everything, reach out to players to get it going, to get traction and to get the first players in there. Because you say you are hard-headed, I hear that you have a strong philosophy, your strong own identity and philosophy, which you didn't want to bend. So you believe in something, I think. Yeah, hard-headed is a different word, but I think you believe in your way of working. And if you want to accomplish something with that, well, it is taking it head on and just do the work.
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. I'm very, you know, have a very clear vision of what I think player development should look like, definitely. And I mean, is that what I do? Yeah, I mean, I was doing it anyway. I was lucky. I'd already been working with a lot of top players at that time. You know, like I say, start your Instagram, start a podcast, do all the other things, you know, you got to do to get your brand out there. I remember actually, because I actually was the last year, that 2012, I actually went to do some camps in Thailand.
Good.
And I said to the guy, look, you can't use a Tottenham badge because, you know, I'll get in trouble here. He goes, no, okay, I won't. Because the problem is no one knows who you are, Saul. You know, you're just Saul, a PDA football at the time. The company's PDA football. So I see, but he ended up using it anyway. And actually, I got a written warning because if someone sent the flyer in and stuff. And I thought, right, I need to be able to have my own brand where I want to travel the world and be a coach where I can go and do camps and on my own back with my own brand. So that was another thing that sort of like, right, let's get out there and sort of make that happen. But I was, you know, the fortune was, like, you know, like I say, when I was working with a lot of top players, you know, like Max Aarons, who's a big one for me, well, got a lot of press when he broke into the first team at Norwich. Yeah. We spent two years, he was without a club from 14 to 16 for 2 years just training with me. So unprecedented in terms of he got into the scholarship after that and then went into the first team within 3 years. Got a lot of press with that. And then, you know, then your name builds, your reputation builds. More players come in, more academy players, and you just sort of carry on, you know. And then you've got all these players who are your walking CVs, if you like, you know. Sure. Yeah, oh, he's wearing a Saul. I can see he's got a bit of Saul in him, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's, let's say, the effect of working or following your own identity. What I think is interesting, and that's something that you, as a coach, or that you kind of have to find or try or whatever, is to get that own identity. Because I think it's not that the goal is to be successful, but you see a lot of coaches that are successful. They have a strong philosophy, a strong identity, and a strong idea on football. And that's what they developed, and that's what they're using, and that's what they get hired for, instead of, oh, you are a chameleon, so you will fit in straight away. No, they want people with a strong opinion.
I think as well, I was fortunate in terms of the people I work with. I talk about Tim American, Keith Boanas, who's my FA mentor educator, but particularly at Tottenham in my early times, working with Chris Ramsey and Danny Buck as well, who I say, you know, without those guys, I definitely wouldn't be where I was now, you know, and same as Bucky, particularly, like, very, you know, same, this is the way to develop players. He's got the experience, he's worked at Arsenal, he's worked at Tottenham, they've done it there. And Chris as well, they're saying, you know, don't worry about other people say, you know, this is what we're doing. And they had a saying which was FIFO, you know, fit in or F off, basically. Which was, you know, that's, you know, we're going to do this. And no one was doing that in the country. No one was doing it in the country at the time. It was very unique. And no one probably still was doing it. Arsenal now have adopted a similar sort of thing now. Interesting. But anyway, yeah, so it's very much, you know, this is what we do. We felt like we were, you know, we were game changers. We were, you know, doing something different. You know, we were, you know, soldiers on the front line here trying to create, change the English game, if you like, making players more technical and better on the ball. So, yeah, I was lucky at that. But I mean, that was always my perception of the game anyway. You know, that's the players I like to watch. That's how I want to see football played. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, I think it's important to have a clear vision.
Yeah, but I think you've chosen to follow that path. It would have been the same thing that I, because I am more team and result oriented, that I would have been, oh no, I'm going to be this all developing guy. I'm only going to have eye for the individual, which is not me. I like watching Mourinho play other teams because he does everything to win. It's just the way that I like to watch good football, but I also enjoy the process of beating somebody else. I don't know if it's a little bit unpopular, but it's something that connects with me, and I still want my team to play nice, and I still want.
Yeah, I think when I
connects with you either or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think when I looked back last year, I was lucky enough when I was invited to go and do some stuff with Arsenal with the 18s and the 23s, and same working with Dan Michici. Dan's one of the best in the world for me in terms of coaching, team coaching, and developing that team style and that playing style. And he wanted me in because he knows my specialism is different. Is I'm the individual guy, and he says that bit of je ne sais quoi, like a little bit of a special sort of thing. But I love working with him because he's so good at the other aspects of it, which is, you know, I want to learn about stuff like that. So I was really, I mean, one of the main reasons I went in there, the chance to work alongside him and see how he works, and then see how my sort of thing sat along with those guys working with the 18s and that sort of thing. So that was a really interesting and enjoyable process. I really enjoyed that. But like I said, I still have so much, you know, appreciation of what he does. But he has a different eye in terms of way of doing things. But I love, you know, it was a real buzz just seeing him work day to day and seeing one of the best in the world do what he does, you know.
Yeah. No, and as soon as you start managing a team, you should find the people around you that add the knowledge that you don't have, or the passion or whatever. Okay, clear. Who would you like to train?
Who would I like to train?
Yeah, so if you could choose any player that you saw are there, who would you like to work with? I didn't prepare you for this question, but I'm going to ask you because I thought it was funny and interesting as well.
You know what? I look at players, like I look at someone like Aaron Wan-Bissaka at Man United, and I can make him so much a better player because he's one of the best 1v1 defenders in the world. I can make him so much better in the final third because that's what I do. Someone like that who's playing at such a high level, and you can see there's one part of their game which I could easily just tangibly go, bang, I could make you so much better in that area. So, and I watched those players, that sort of thing. But I mean, I think players like that, you know, that's why I get the buzz from work. Players who come to me who play in the Premier League and say, well, I want to do something. I say, right, straight away, boom. I know something we can work with straight away. So a player I've been working on recently, you know, a first team player who, same thing, he worked. I watched his first game beginning of the season. They played against Arsenal. I won't say the player the name because obviously I'm asked him. But he said, "I said, look, what you have to be better in is this. At the final third, we looked at a certain situation where he's 1v1. I said, you've got to be able to be courageous enough and good enough to break the line against a fullback. You know, when you're in there, rather than turning playing back. We've done a lot of sessions. We worked on it, and then you know, I watched him one game just before the Christmas break, and he played Man City and he done Cancelo and the exact thing we worked on the exact 1v1." Tactic, and I thought, wow, that really made me buzz. I thought, well, this is it, you know, this is the highest level we're making changes here. So yeah, that's really rewarding.
Can you show me the picture? Can you share a picture with us how you are sitting in front of the TV then? Is it you on the couch standing up and screaming, or what happens then?
It is. Well, it's funny. Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, it is me jumping up in the car, screaming and videoing it. But funny, same as when I was working with Dan Machicha at Arsenal in the 18s, same thing. We identified one of these players, a forward player, as a top striker. Same again, edge of the box, 1v1. And he just failed a couple of times to solve the problem. So I said, Dan, look, give me this. So in the week, I worked a couple of times with him. Away in the session, I pulled him out, did some stuff in the 1v1 element. And then the game against West Ham, he played on the weekend, that weekend. Then he tried the skill and actually he won a corner. He wasn't successful. And I was jumping up in the yes, come on. And Dan was like, why are you celebrating a corner? And that's ridiculous. I said, because, and he saw this as, that was for me, that was it. This guy had been, we worked on something. It wasn't completely successful. He didn't manage to get part, but he was courageous enough to try it and we had partial success. So those sorts of things, you know, that's the difference, I think, you know, because that's my individual eye, what I look at. I look at something a little bit different there from maybe what other coaches look for.
I can imagine it's highly rewarding that you see players trying or pushing themselves to what they probably can or maybe not even can yet, but whatever, that you see the outcome of your
work. No. Yeah, especially, you know when you're in the stadium or you're on the TV watching things and you're seeing players work on do something which they couldn't do before and they're doing it in the game at the very highest level. It's fantastic.
Yeah, great. It is all, well, that's my assumption again, but it's a lot of attacking work, ball work. Do you also focus on defense or?
Yeah, I can do. I mean, I do spend a lot more time on individual possession. But I mean, yeah, we work on defending. You know, can work on out of possession. But my passion, my specialism is in individual possession when on the ball. So even when I'm working with centre backs, we're working a lot in terms of way of receiving to try and break lines, get out and play forward and that sort of thing. Yeah, a lot of aerial control, not being able to, you know, break pressure, and to do that. Obviously, you know, and then obviously if a player needs that defending work, they can get the defending work. But what you normally find is that's what's got them there is their defending ability, and they usually lack the quality on the ball. But obviously, yeah, you know, you do have to work on 1v1 or group defending as well.
How is your quality on the ball? Because I saw one, I don't know who it was, but you were like moving up to, how do you call it, like a dummy or a puppet. You got the ball, you turned, and then you hit the ball in the net, in the corner, top corner, top bins. And I heard the guy scream, oh, yeah, it's only your second time. That's interesting. Your own skills are important as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm technically always been okay, pretty good. I mean, physically, you know, I never had the physical capability to play at a high level, that sort of thing. But technically, I grew up, you know, within the inner city London on the streets and in the cages and stuff. So I was always technically very good. So luckily, occasionally I can pull those demos out when I need to.
Well, it happens a little bit it helps a little bit in your authority that you can still show it.
Yeah, I think so. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, if you get there and you can't kick a ball straight or, you know, whip one into the top bin, then you probably lose a bit of credibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Clear. Okay. I have a last question for you. Who should we talk to next?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about this. I think, like I said, Danny Buck, I'd recommend you. And like I said, one of the big mentors and influences of my career. He's coached like even longer than me, a lot longer than me. He's actually a bit younger than me, ironically. But he's like, yeah, in terms of, you know, he worked many years at Tottenham and Arsenal before that. He's at Arsenal again now. But like someone who understands technical development, understands the process of team development as well. And just someone who's, again, who's big inspiration in my work. And, you know, like I said, he's very open and he's very opinionated and he's good. And he's been there and done that. And he's worked with some top players and some unbelievable coaches in top environments as well.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can get him on. What would you ask him?
I'd ask him, that's another good question. I don't know. Well, I've had him on my podcast. I've asked him quite a few questions before. But just about his own development, really, which is quite interesting. You know, how he... It's always interesting, like you say, you know, my journey, his journey, you know, his influences, how he sees the game, you know, and, you know, how he got to where he is.
We had Bart Kauberg on. I don't know if you know him. He was like a performance coach of Chelsea women. And he had jobs around elite clubs in Europe and also Middle East. And he said everybody, whatever you do, but especially in football as well, needs a mentor. This is probably, you're not in those words, but you're kind of saying the same.
Well, I've actually got, I mean, Bucky's a really good friend of mine and he was like a mentor in terms of me. I learned a lot from him when I was coming up from Tottenham specifically, I worked very much alongside him, under him. So massive influence in my career and a mentor that way. And same with Chris Ramsey. But actually now I do actually have mentors as well. I do, you know, I mentor young coaches, and I actually have, you know, three mentors in my life, which are really important to me and help me with not only my coaching, but my business as well. Sure. And that sort of thing, and my sort of brand development. So yeah, I definitely say, you know, I recommend that to anybody.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Good final tip for everybody, advice for everybody. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, MyFootballCoach1, Twitter, MyFootballCoach, LinkedIn, drop me a message if you want to. I'm on download the My Personal Football Coach app. It's free to download. Clubs like Arsenal use it and many other Premier League clubs.
It's on the app. It's a lot of content and exercises, footage. What is on it?
Yeah, it's just like individual ball work. So you can download it. There's lots of skills.
Players are coach oriented.
Well, the app specifically is for players. Okay. If you go to My Personal Football Coach, the website, that's more coach specific, where we have coaching courses, coaching resources, and that sort of thing. So there's a couple of it's for players, coaches, and parents.
Yeah, so if you're a coach, you can look into that. But maybe if you want to help your players a little bit, you could suggest the app to your players.
Absolutely, players. There's courses on there, like for players. Like I'd run an individual session. You can download that sort of thing. Position specific sessions for players. And on, like, say, the coaches, we have, you know, the ball mastery and 1v1 courses, online courses you can do, and like coach resources, like sessions from all around the world and that sort of thing.
Perfect.
And also we have the virtual conference, which you mentioned. So virtual conference of some of the best player developers in the world as well.
Yeah, I saw it. I seen it. And, I saw Joop was on there, so that's why I asked Joop for the numbers. So that's how things go. Okay, thank you very much, Saul. I really appreciate it. I know that you are open to questions for everybody. They know where to find you. You're absolutely out there. And I hope one day that my Instagram will be as big as yours. But I don't have that type of content, and I will probably never make it. But
keep on dreaming. Never give up the dream.
Oh well, yeah. I am just as hard headed as you, I think. So we'll find a way. We'll find a way. Thank you. Thank you again, Saul, and speak soon.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside the Coach's Room. Make sure to subscribe or rate us in your favorite podcast player, or share this episode on your social media, and we will make sure that you will get access to the best webinar that's available on our website. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I would be happy to connect.